This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, April 18th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the winner of the 2012 Ruth Lilly Prize. Every year, the Poetry Foundation awards the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize for Lifetime Achievement. The first winner, in 1986, was Audrian Rich. And other winners over the years include W.S. Merwin, Kay Ryan, William Stafford, Lucille Clifton, and Donald Hall. This year, the $100,000 prize goes to Simone DiPiero. DiPiero lives in San Francisco, but he was born and raised in Philadelphia, a city that has made its way into many of his poems. In fact, his language is often beautifully gnarled and twisted by carefully observed urban realities. As Christian Wyman, the editor of Poetry Magazine, says, DiPiero wakes up the language, and in doing so wakes up his readers, whose lives are suddenly sharper and larger than they were before. He's a great poet whose work is just beginning to get the wide audience it deserves. Simone DiPiero joins me from KQED in San Francisco. Simone, congratulations.
Thanks.
I want to hop right to it. Can I get you to read your poem, Having My Cards Read, which was published in Poetry in 2009? And is there anything that we should know in advance about this poem?
Only that the cards that are being read are tarot cards, and that there are four lines in this poem that are spoken by the person who is reading my cards.
Okay, why don't you give it a read then?
Having my cards read. Hobos wail a garbage can against the cyclone lynx. The monkey puzzle tree droops its scaly tails above our heads as she sets up near the zoo's bonobos, humping happy in their cages, close to chimps ripping off each other's ears. And in the cloud reposing on the sky, cut by an F-22's long hookah puffs, the cyan atmospherics rupture into solarized platelets. Her Ray-Bans foil my own face back at me. A time of renewals, though somewhere, dark, cold, woe, you won't know what's what. Comes a taste of sea to make her pause, and marine gusts slice and spook her cards, my cards, that flurry to the sidewalk, near the barred gate, breaking fortune down faster as she speaks.
That was Having My Cards Read. So, I mean, I guess you could have called that poem Having My Cards Almost Read, because the wind blows them away before the speaker actually hears his fortune.
Never happens.
But I guess that would have given away your ending there. I have a couple questions about this poem. It begins, hobos wail a garbage can against the cyclone lynx. Now, I think cyclone lynx is a type of fence you're describing.
Yeah.
But hobos, why hobos and not the more contemporary word homeless?
Well, hobos has a certain sound, and sound rules for me. And the sentence is in poetry for me. It's a shape of feeling. It's a way of giving a shape to a passage in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting the sentence right with the proper sonorities, it matters enormously to me.
Yeah, and you can feel that in every poem that I've read of yours. The poem is situated outside the zoo, and the bonobos are humping away as they are wont to do while the chimps are fighting. And the very next image also contrasts peace with a kind of violence, a subtle violence. And in the cloud reposing on the sky, cut by an F-22's long hookah puffs. Was this a conscious attempt to go capture a very particular experience?
Sure. It's just that a particular experience for me is always complicated,
mm-hmm.
and usually conflicted. I guess my dream experience would be a pure, unconflicted tonality.
A pure, unconflicted tonality. What do you mean by that?
I keep aspiring toward a certain kind of simplicity that I seem never quite able to achieve.
Because reality intrudes? So.
Reality is just a menace. And to honor experience, to honor the real, means to constantly allow that menace into my consciousness when I'm making poems.
So in this case, the menace could be the F-22s and their long hookah puffs up above.
Yes.
And and I love this fact that the fortune teller is wearing Ray-Bans.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I see myself in her eyes.
Yeah.
And she's the one who's supposed to be about to tell my fortune.
And the fortune that she begins to read, a time of renewals, though somewhere dark, cold woe, you won't know what's what. And then it's rudely interrupted. That's a fortune that could apply to any of us, really, because we're all in for a dark, cold woe at some point in our life, I would think. Does it mean anything in particular to you?
No.
So it's just like a generic fortune.
Yeah, and you know, my imagination, at least, of this particular fortune teller is that, as fortune telling goes, she's the equivalent of a dollar store.
Mm-hmm. So the wind comes and blows these cards away, and as you say, breaking fortune down faster as she speaks. I guess what I walk away from this poem with is a sense that everything's up in the air, nothing can be known. A total randomness of things. Is that what you were intending to get at here?
I never think of my poems especially being about any.
I know, no poets, they hate that.
Yeah. Having subjects, you know. But the action of the poem is the action of accident, chance, and of things constantly, as you say, being up in the air, blown apart, blown away. Yeah, I mean, if the poem is about something, that's what it must be about.
Let's hear another poem. Could you read What's Left? And before you do so, tell us anything that we might need to know about this one before you read it.
I'll tell you something after I read the poem about a phrase that appears in the poem.
And I think I know what that phrase is going to be. So here's Simone Di Piero reading What's Left.
What's left? How often now? Raging, weeping for the days love gives then takes away. Takes from you the slightly chapped hand laid on the one you're pointing at a tree. And the voice that breathes coffeeberry bush into your mouth. The finger that taps and feathers your ear, but the giggle's gone before you turn around. The sandalwood scent hanging in the room. The auburn strand like a flaw in the porcelain. The nail clippings sting in the carpet. The days eat into your stomach, knife you with longing for relief from love that you cannot leave or leave alone. From its rings of fire, where you won't burn down to ash or be transformed. You become them, and they keep burning, and they have a coffeeberry voice. Hear their rhymes, hear them sing the little deaths you live.
That was What's Left, which was published just last April in Poetry Magazine. Simone, this is a poem of loss, but it's not clear if the person lost is dead or if there's been a breakup or some sort of separation. Is that deliberate on your part?
Yes. The poem was occasioned by a particular loss, the breakup of a relationship. And being the kind of poet I am, I avoid very narrow-gauge anecdotes. And so even when I'm writing about something which lives in me as a specific kind of love loss, there's a certain level of intensity and complexity of feeling that I work to shape in poetry generally. And this poem is especially intense because I happen to write it with a particular kind of, what to say, hurtful urgency.
Hmm. So what was the phrase you wanted to bring up?
Oh, this is an anecdote. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This appeared in the magazine, and I got an email from a high school student because their class was reading that issue of the magazine, and he had to say something about this poem. So, brave lad that he was, he wrote me an email.
Mm-hmm.
His question was about the phrase coffeeberry bush, and he wanted to know why I used it in the poem, and then he listed a couple of possible hypothetical reasons why, blah, blah. My answer, and I was just trying to answer his question, really, without being mystifying, was that though the coffeeberry bush is a plant that you see in Northern California, it's there because it's the kind of sound that would be really hard to forget if somebody wasn't saying it to you close up anymore.
I'm glad he asked that question so I didn't have to.
All right.
Let's hear another one. Can you read It's That Time, which was also published in Poetry Magazine in April of last year? And before we hear it, though, can you remind us who Cherubino is?
Yeah, Cherubino is a figure in Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro. Mm-hmm. It's a he, but the role is always sung by a she. But the thing about Cherubino is that he loves in order to love. He loves because he's constantly in love and is in love because he wants to love. And he's just driven by this wonderful, buoyant heedlessness about love while everybody else around him is scheming in one way or another about one thing or another. Mm-hmm. So that's who he, she is.
So go ahead and give it a read. Here's It's That Time.
The quiet of night hours isn't really quiet. You hear the air hiss, even when it doesn't move. It's a memory of the day. Nothing stirs. Memory lags. No traffic hushing up and down tricky hills among the camphor trees. No foghorns, no streetcars shrilling phantoms before they emerge from tunnels. The absences keep us alert. No rain or street voices. Nobody calling to someone else. Anna, you walk the dog tonight yet, or what? Yet, there are certain things. The sexy shifting of trees. And refrigerator buzzing. While Cherubino sings, the best of love is enthusiasm's intense abandon. A voice in song that preys on no one and is unconscious of its joy.
It's That Time. Simone, I think this is one of the happiest poems that you've ever written.
Oh, that's what a relief to hear that.
That's such a lovely, beautiful poem. And it's something that's so easy to put yourself in the place of the speaker in the poem and listen to the sounds as the poet hears them. Except for the Hannah, you walk the dog tonight or yet or what? Does that come from Philadelphia?
Oh, yeah, it comes from inside my head. And since the inside of my head originated in South Philadelphia. Yeah.
at the end of the poem, you go to Cherubino, and he's crazy about love. What you're celebrating in the poem is the kind of egolessness, the unself-consciousness of sheer vitality. And that last line, and is unconscious of its joy. Does consciousness kill joy?
No, it certainly doesn't kill joy, but I think, I haven't thought about this much, but I suppose, now that you ask, that a joy that somehow is experienced at the same time one is also being self-aware of the experience of joy is differently toned from joy that is not in any way dyed by self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. But just the fact that this is in a poem suggests consciousness.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And delight in it, enjoy in it. And one senses the pleasure of you having written this poem as well at the very end. Simone DiPiero, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Curtis.
Simone DiPiero is the winner of the 2012 Ruth Lilly Award. The award will be presented at a ceremony in Chicago in June. To read more poems by Simone DiPiero, go to our website, or better yet, buy one of his books. His latest is Nitro Nights, published by Copper Canyon Press. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.